All right, you're on the Arms Room with Glenn.
And John.
Woo!
America.
Glorious week. Mason's forgetting stuff already this morning.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Like really important things.
Really, really important things. But that's all right, Mason. We'll let it slide again. You are it. What did I just say?
I have no idea.
I was looking at Mason. My brain just...
Why don't you collect yourself and then come back at me in like 5 minutes? God.
Even... Ugh, all right.
We're stroking out on us right now?
Might be. We are in the Cowtown studio, brought to you by Cowtown Range, and our show is always brought to you by our good friends over at AR500 Armor. Check them out at AR500Armor.com, and of course, check out our show last week.
Yeah.
Where we had Tyler, the owner of AR500 Armor, in the show, talking with us about...
A lot of things,
how
actually.
How he got started, yeah. Where they're headed, all those great, wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, how was your weekend, John?
Oh, it was just super.
You had like a 5-day weekend.
Yeah, I did have a 5-day weekend. Well, we taught at SRP Wednesday.
We did.
I left from there and went straight to drill. Ugh. And drilled Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And let me tell you, as the new operations guy,
yeah,
I don't like, I sat in the office all freaking weekend while the rest of the guys were out running EOD sticks lanes. Made me very sad.
That's what happens, buddy. You know how it is. Yeah, as soon as you want to go from E6 to anything else,
yeah.
Goodbye field.
Yeah.
Hello, desk.
Woo! Mahogany bomber time, baby.
So today, December 7th.
Yes, it is.
It's an important date.
It is.
The day that would live in infamy.
Yes, it will.
As they would say.
Yeah.
Pearl Harbor.
Yes, sir.
Our big entrance into World War II.
Yep.
The surprise you got our attention day.
Got you. Well, so, guess what?
So, you know, keep that in mind. You know, I don't really know, like, older holidays. I mean, what do you remember? We don't, like, want to attack the Japanese anymore.
No.
Remembering the guys.
Speak for yourself. Well, think
today's show
it.
Brought to you by Japan.
Yeah. This is going to be exactly what 9/11's like in 50 years. They're going to be like, oh, that was...
No, that's not true. Like, and you want to know why? Because we're still going to hate the same damn enemy we hate right now. Because we've hated them for centuries, right? We've been running crusades on those people for a long time, and it ain't going to stop any freaking time soon.
The rest of today's show brought to you by Glenn's Soapbox. Available on Monday mornings. From 10 to 11 a.m.
Yeah, so that's how I feel about that. And on that note, San Bernardino.
Holy crap.
So, San Bernardino. Crazy.
But guns are illegal there.
I know, as is murder.
Yeah.
And I love the most is in the beginning of the news stories, and of course this has already like been floating around the internet, but it's like, they're like, all these probably three white ring extremists, blah, 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 blah. And then they see them, and they're like, well, let's not jump to conclusions here. You're like, ha, 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 ha. Oh, the fox in the hen house, people. Stop thinking that it's not. So arm yourselves and train, learn things, important things. Learn how to shoot. Learn how to carry. If you live behind enemy lines, learn how to move.
Quickly.
Away from places that don't want your freedom. Because quit giving them your freaking tax dollars, man. They hate you. Understand that. If you live behind enemy lines in a crappy state that infringes on your freedoms, it's because they hate you and they want to control you and they don't want you to be free. And God bless you for staying there and trying your hardest. And I know that it's very tough. People obviously can't just up and move. But, man, think about that. I mean, think about ways to change that. I can't even imagine living in a place that totally infringes on my freedom to defend myself against things like San Bernardino. Like sheep to the slaughter, man. Those people don't stand a chance. Now, that being said, it is important people learn how to do important things like medicine.
What?
At the very least, you could learn other types of weapons or tools that you could carry to potentially defend yourself, at least up close. And certainly, you can do things like TAC medicine, learn how to stop bleeding, start breathing. Those are important skills.
On a semi-related note, you also heard about the gun show this weekend, right?
I did indeed. I was in the middle of a medical class when I started getting texts from some of our friends and students saying, someone just got shot at the Char So, and I was like, ha, ha, ha. It was like a 7. What's the Tokarev? What's the round the Tokarev? 7.25 or something like that?
7.62 by...
7.62 by 2.5 or something like that. Some crazy, yeah. Something or other.
Yeah, some Tokarev. Weird.
And yeah, they got shot. At first, I heard it was a vendor, but now maybe it's like a vendor shot his family member or something? I don't know. Either way, someone took a round at the freaking gun show. And if only, man, you know what we should do? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to invent these rules. I'm going to invent a series of rules, a very short list. And if everyone would follow these rules, then, you know, this kind of stupid crap.
Wait, I know where this is going.
Yeah. Are there all four ears. Of them?
There are. In fact, I was thinking I was going to make four of them. I was thinking I was going to make four of these rules. Yeah. And then if we followed these rules, then stupid stuff like this wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
If only someone had done this before.
I don't think so.
Good thing I'm on the cutting edge of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Freaking people, man.
You should patent it.
You should.
Solid. For the people that don't know, we're talking about the firearm safety rules, just in case.
That already exist.
Because, I mean, obviously people don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, there's obviously some people that have no idea what in the hell we're talking about when we talk about the four firearm safety rules. Yeah, so they do exist and they are important. You should maybe check them out from time to time. Yeah. There's an interesting article I read this morning about a SWAT doc who was one of the first people to respond over San Bernardino.
Yeah.
He just grabbed his kit and rushed out there and tried to start helping people. So it's a pretty good story. He was using, you know, slapping on tourniquets and Izzy bandages. And basically they were talking about I'm reading this article real quick. They were talking about how, you know, more medics these days are starting to get trained in firearms and the application of deadly force instead of just being medics. Now they're healers and shooters.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. I'm glad to see law enforcement start to move in that direction because it's pretty important. That's a necessary thing to have in our current environment. So answers, of course, brought to us by the wonderful left side of things is more gun-free zones are needed.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that this happened in a gun-free zone.
That's not true.
Yeah.
No, there's never been a single mass shooting in a gun-free zone. Yeah, only 90% I don't know what you're talking about.
Just 90% of them.
That's crazy That's talk. All.
Now, here's the most important thing that everyone can really take away from this. Because events like this are neither shocking nor surprising to me, right? With the current enemy that we're combating, combined with the current environment in our society and general issues that we've talked about on the show before, with people's apathy in taking care of themselves, this is neither shocking nor surprising. And they're going to continue to happen. So, whoa, America, just prepare yourself. It's going to happen. Here's the biggest thing that we got to do. Don't freaking panic and run to the gun stores and start driving up prices on ammunition and magazines and lower parts kits and all that.
I'm not sure, but I think it might already be
too late. It's already starting to happen. People are already starting to panic on stuff. And it's just...
That sucks. And I was just...
Stop.
Just starting to get ahead of the curve on my ammunition stores.
Just stop panicking all the freaking time. I mean, it's great for retail. Don't get me wrong, but... It makes it very difficult for the rest of us when we just want to buy normal stuff at normal prices.
I can neither confirm or deny that that's good for retail. I wouldn't possibly want to say that panic buying is anyway helpful to our industry. But
well, it's great for you. Yeah. Great for you. So chiming in there on that topic is Quinn from Brethren Armament, who was our guest for the day. How you doing, Quinn?
I'm doing all right, guys. Thanks for having me up here today.
Of course. So I'm interested. You know, you're a vet, you're a gun guy, you're in the business, you're in the industry. What's your take on San Bernardino?
We did put out, I think there was a press release by 5-Eleven that the new California compliant pants will be available right after the first of the year.
Correct.
The California's pocket capacity rule should be in there now that apparently salt clothing is a thing. another very fun term that we had developed was the multi-automatic firearm, apparently. So that is now something that we have to contend with. I'm going to go ahead and figure out how I can go ahead and invent one just so we actually do have
something
for California to complain about and ban.
What they call it? The multi-automatic?
It was a multi-automatic weapon. We had assault clothes. And then the other thing that got touted quite a bit was the concept of the bullet button and how that is an instant conversion to a fully automatic weapon.
Right. Right. I saw
wait
that.
Wait a minute. That's correct. Absolutely not right.
That's correct. That if you put the bullet button on, it automatically converts your gun to fully automatic, which, of course, we all know as intelligent thinking adults who have Google and stuff like that, that if, in fact, hold on just a second. Hold on, America. Hold on, wait, liberals.
Didn't California invented the bullet button, right?
Yes. Well,
yeah, that's kind of their thing so that you could only have so many bullets.
California is the only place where we've actually, they just passed a loophole, but all last year we were selling guns into California, of course, completely legally. But in order for them to come in, they had to come under the SSE or single shot exemption rule, which means we literally had to sell a gun that could fire one round. That was it.
So here you go. Here's the news. Now, we know what bullet buttons are, of course. Bullet buttons are a small little device when attached appropriate to the magazine release, allow a fixed 10-round magazine from a California-compliant gun to then release that magazine, which for California purposes is only supposed to be used for maintenance. But, of course, we have a lot of students come to independence training classes from California, and they then use it legally in Arizona to release their magazines. Now, another thing I'll say about the bullet button is most of the time it doesn't work right. So here's the news from CBS Local News. Bullet button let massacre shooters buy legal semi-automatic rifles. What the hell? The bullet button let them buy legal semi-automatic rifles? Those semi-automatic rifles were already legal. They were just only firing 10 rounds. Now, right below that, of course, is the Wikipedia thing. So if you're a liberal and you're unfamiliar with Google, if you go to Google and you type in any freaking word that you want, it will actually come up with a factual definition, not based on emotion or preconceived ideas. It will actually bring up facts. So here you go.
Get that crap out of here. No facts allowed.
Bullet button is a device used to permanently fix a magazine in a semi-automatic rifle that was originally built to accept a detachable magazine in order to comply with gun laws in California. It replaces the magazine release with a block, and the user needs to remove the magazine by using a tool. So if you're an idiot, stop being an idiot. Go to Google, and Google will make you less of an idiot.
The sad part is even the talking heads in the media and whatnot are so quick to get the story out that they're not even – I mean, I think we take more time to find out, you know, what Reba McEntire's birthday is before we would bother saying something like, by the way, you can now buy a fully automatic gun by installing this thing called a bullet button. I mean, right. It's at the point where Wikipedia is now an acceptable, objective information source that we would rather have used as opposed to anyone else saying anything.
So factual.
It is a very interesting state of affairs, to say the least.
So we've got assault clothing. We've got multi-automatic firearms.
That's awesome.
And then we also now have the bullet button, which creates fully automatic weapons. Correct?
I think technically it would be making multi-automatic weapons, though.
Ooh. Okay, so the bullet button creates multi-automatic weapons, so when you're in assault clothing, you can become a workplace violence shooter.
That is true.
Did I get them all in there?
Not a terrorist.
Not a terrorist. Whoa. This is not terrorism.
Yes. Yes, it is.
This is workplace violence.
No.
He was at his workplace.
You don't say that.
He was at his workplace.
Where were his other two buddies? Were they at his workplace as
well? They were near his workplace. They were coming to his workplace. They had seen his workplace.
I'm going
to
smack you if you don't stop.
Workplace violence. I love it. All right. So San Bernardino, of course, most people listening to our show agree with everything we say, but we just like to make a big deal out of things anyways.
Well, maybe not everything we say.
But they agree with a lot of – in fact, that's probably true. In fact, I hope most of our listeners don't agree with everything we say, so – because that would be sad. Don't agree with everything we say. We're wrong. John's wrong sometimes.
I'm
never wrong. Every now and then, John is wrong. Me?
Rarely.
Never.
At best.
Rarely. I'll give him that. All right. San Bernardino's ridiculous. But this is the point. Like, we have to combat these things, not with panic buying sprees, because that doesn't combat this kind of nonsense. You know, you have to spread appropriate and correct information to people around you so that they understand the silliness behind this. Otherwise, we end up with, you know, whoever that gal was. I can't remember if she's a state rep or a senator or whatever on the news 2004-ish when they were trying to re-up basically the assault weapons ban. And they're asking her what a barrel shroud is, you know, and she says it's the shoulder thing that goes up, which of course is a classic, you know, gun control idiocy moment. But that's the kind of stuff we end up with when we're talking about multi-automatic weapons and bullet buttons that
ghost
make
guns and ghost, 30 magazine
ghost guns
clips.
And 30 magazine bullet clips or whatever the heck that guy said. I mean, it's just absolute idiocy, and we have to combat that with facts, because it is just, we don't need anything else on our side. We just need facts. That's all we need. We don't need to. We don't.
No,
even,
we must we argue with emotion.
We don't even need to encourage people to think like us. We don't even have to prove our point. We just have to use facts and stuff.
Well, in order do that, though, we also have to combat those same emotional or anecdotal evidence-based arguments that we use even with ourselves in the industry.
That's true.
I mean, everything from, you know, the guys that carry 45 caliber rounds because their buddy shot a guy with it and he evaporated to
right.
Fire clean gate or whatever they decided to call that. You know, even stuff in my little niche of the industry when words like licensing and clone get passed around, a lot of it's based off of anecdotal evidence. And that's one of the things that we strive for at our company is focusing specifically on objective facts and reputable sources that can actually be verified independently. It's what we do in the scientific community. It's what we do in the engineering community. And we in the firearms industry have gotten duped a couple times into buying snake oil and following along with the Pied Piper on stuff that, you know, should have been easily noticed and should have been, you know, easily culled from the herd. So it's definitely something I think that we need to start ourselves within our community, because that will make things a lot easier when we start to branch out and start interacting with those other groups, especially those that don't agree with us.
So let's talk actually more about your company, since that's really what our show's about, not San Bernardino. So who is Brethren Armament?
Brethren Armament is myself and my brother Kyle. We started the company up just about 4 years ago now. My brother and I both grew up in the automotive maintenance industry. We grew up in a service shop. We've owned several companies throughout our lives in heavy equipment manufacturing and things like that. So we got a chance to really cut our teeth on the manufacturing or the production side of blank. It wasn't firearms related, and that's one of the things we're actually very happy about, because we didn't come in as gun guys and shooters that wanted to learn how to do manufacturing, fabrication. That's where we started. In addition to that, my brother and I are both disabled vets. He was in the Air Force, which I try to not harass him too much about. I served in the Army from in 2003, so with OIF-1. After that, after we both got out and in between other businesses and then other ventures, he went on to a career in law enforcement for several years with a local department, Gilbert. I worked in the security industry for private and government groups doing security consulting, all sorts of stuff here locally for the state and some of the critical infrastructure, some of which the guys you are actually working with. And then eventually moved on to providing that same level of security and consulting overseas, doing dignity protection, all that fun stuff. So after about a decade of doing that and finally getting so run down and broken, the wife said it was time to come home. So I turned in my gun for a pencil and went back to engineering school. And somewhere in the middle of that, we decided to start up a firearms company. And that's where we've ended up here. We've had the fortune to be able to be self-financed, self-funded. We're not beholden to anyone. So when we actually are able to release products, we're not releasing them with just the bottom line in mind. We're actually trying to focus on making the best whatever it is that we're doing that particular time. And since we both, you know, still have other jobs and other interests that we do in the meantime, we're able to focus on quality as opposed to just, you know, clearing out that big bank loan or making those investors happy to get product out there. So it's really what we've been focusing on since then.
Now, I want to get more into that, because you and I had an interesting conversation earlier about that exact topic and engineers versus gun manufacturers versus just someone slapping it together. But before we do that, we had a question already from one of our listeners that has a very specific question for you.
Okay.
This isn't something for me. So this is from Tim. He asked, does the BA-300 require changing locking shoulders to run sonic and subsonic unsuppressed?
As of right now, the answer is no. The BA-300, the engineering on the 300 locking piece, and I use that term very loosely, was not done by us. It was done by another manufacturer. And I can't attest to the how well that was done in terms of testing. From what we've seen, we've gotten the 300 system to work with both suppressed and unsuppressed ammo. I'm sorry, both subsonic and supersonic ammo in both suppressed and unsuppressed. It is still a little on the finicky side. We are trying to build more data on that. And the end result is probably going to be a redesign of that locking piece to better capture the inherent performance capabilities of the system. But we've been running the Gemtech ammo. They're 220 subs. They've run fantastically. We've done a lot of testing with several different suppressor brands, mainly Griffin Armament's been one of our main focuses, because those are guys we used to work with overseas, and they share the same commitment that we do for products. Even the nasty UMC green and white box, we've actually haven't had any issues with reliable cycling. That being the case, you know, there's always improvements to be made, and that caliber specifically still got a lot of growing room to do. And of course, that also means that our platform is going to have to grow with it as well. But as of right now, it's been running really well. If you have any specifics on ballistics or anything like that, make sure to reach out to us on our website, and we'll cover that specifically. But as of right now, short answer is yes, it does run with a single locking piece in both formats.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you. All right. So now let's talk about kind of what you and I were talking about initially when we were like, hey, you should come on the show and talk more about that, right? Because we love to, you know, we kind of love to rant around here.
I hadn't noticed.
It's good for the soul, you know?
Yeah.
And we don't get a lot of outlets because we're always teaching. You know, when you don't really get to rant too much while you're teaching, you pretty be pretty professional and everything. And, you know, my poor wife, she has to listen to me rant all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't get to rant as much as we'd like. So we kind of like the show because it gives us a free voice. We're not like you. We're kind of not beholden to anybody. We just kind of do what we want, which is great. So feel free to say what you want to say. But we've had a couple of shows in the past on the difference between an AR manufacturer and an AR builder, right? And we've had some AR manufacturers in here who are like, hey, we build all of our own stuff, and there's a big difference between building all of your own stuff and, you know, having to go through the R&D and having to go through the hard work to make it all work together. And then there's a difference between ordering everyone else's parts and then putting it together, right? That makes you a builder, not necessarily a manufacturer. What's kind of their take on that? Now, you come along and you add a whole other spin to that because you say, okay, great, builders, manufacturers, that's neat, but let's talk about engineers.
Right. Within the manufacturing industry, in every other industry, there's no separation between those two. If you manufacture anything that's, you know, of any sort of quality, even the crap Chi-Com stuff you guys get, there has to be some sort of engineering involved in that in order to make a quality product. And that's everything from doing the basic, you know, idea or being able to forward that on from your cocktail napkin up to something that can actually be produced and actually looking at your quantities of scale and all sorts of, I'm sorry, economies of scale and all the different parts that are involved in manufacturing. The ATF does not make any sort of delineation in that group where if you're a manufacturer, that means your name is on the serialized part and that's it. A lot of the, even the firearms quote unquote manufacturers out there, a lot of them do not have their own equipment. They don't have, you know, CNC shops. They don't have fabrication capabilities to be able to make that stuff. They buy the rights to be able to put their name on there through a variance from, you know, one of less than a dozen guys that actually do make a lot of these parts out there. Mm-hmm. So, and even with the AR platform, because it's been around so long and there's been so much data that's been worked up on there, that me as a guy who, if I didn't have any knowledge whatsoever on manufacturing or anything like that, I can within 6 months be able to be, you know, producing parts on there because I don't have to, there's no guesswork. It's almost all been done. All that information is readily available. You know, there's blueprints and everything else for almost every part of the AR already out there. You really don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. Where it comes into is when you start making something new. Mm-hmm. You know, there's for every, you know, AR manufacturer or builder out there, there's probably another 50 guys that are coming up with new muzzle brake designs and all this other stuff. And the thing is, and this isn't trying to be condescending to those groups, but things like when you're going to make a muzzle brake and you want specific performance metrics or something to be in there, it's not something that is very easy to do. You know, you're taking into account some really difficult, you know, physical phenomenon like fluid dynamics, which, you know, to give you an idea how bad that stuff is, we don't have the ability to actually, we don't have mathematical formulas to be able to solve half of this stuff in there. It all has to be done through a different system because they're so incredibly complex. It's math that's beyond anything I'm even capable of in order to figure that stuff out. It's very complicated, very dynamic, very, very diverse systems. And what we see a lot in the firearms world is some guys will have good ideas and some guys will try and go do that stuff and they will kind of do the guess and check method and they might come on to something that actually works. There, a lot of times there's not really a great understanding of why it works, but it's, hey, this works, we're going to run with it. And what winds up happening is you do have a good idea or something like that, but you're not able to optimize it because it's difficult stuff to do. And again, it's not talking down to the people that are in that industry or people that are doing that, because that's where a lot of innovation's found. But especially in a market that is so incredibly saturated like that, it makes it very difficult to make anything new. And without finding out those core concepts that's in there, it's really hard to make it the best new thing that's out there. And that's where we've been focusing on everything that we're making and everything else. All of our components are actually now manufactured in-house. We make everything from raw materials all the way up to the finished gun. And we work with a couple other guys in the industry that actually can make that claim in the AR world of saying, yeah, your gun comes in as a block of aluminum. We literally cut every single part out of there and manufacture everything else to the same kind of standards we learn in the automotive industry. And that kind of brings up the other idea of standards. You know, when guys talk about, well, it's mil spec or it's tight tolerance, there are all this other stuff. We throw a lot of buzzwords around, but those don't really, without the proper connotation involved, they don't mean anything, or they could actually be bad. So, I mean, it's another 3-hour conversation to have about the implications of that in the firearms industry. But suffice it to say for the listeners and the prospective buyers out there that, you know, really pay attention to those buzzwords that are used and do your research when you're going to go buy anything, whether it's a $5 trinket, whether it's, you know, some new oil or lube that's out there, or you're going to go spend several $1,000s on any sort of firearm or weapon system that's out there. You know, make sure that you're getting what you pay for and the performance and quality that you're expecting or you're paying for is actually getting returned. So it's a difficult process. It's a difficult subject to even cover, even in the amount of time that we have. And suffice it to say, yes, firearms manufacturers and builders are different. It goes the same with anyone else. If you were to see a car on the road that was, you know, all parts from everyone else, but, you know, my name's Jim and this is my car, I built it, you would probably be a little bit more worried about buying it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the same idea that goes into play of, you know, everything's not designed to be plug and play necessarily. And even what there is, there's good ways to do it, there's better ways to do it, and there's bad ways to do it. And I definitely think the industry as the whole needs to start looking at that stuff and start actually focusing on real quantifiable, you know, improvements, metrics to be able to say this is better instead of this is new, because we get duped into that a lot.
Yeah, that's a major problem in gear and equipment in general, is the difference between this is better and this is new. Because there's a lot of new stuff, and we make fun of a lot of it in classes and on our show. We make fun of a lot of new stuff because that's all it is.
Yep.
It's just new. But it's not increasing the performance. It's not increasing the capability. It's not doing anything. I mean, like you talk about muzzle brakes. Man, that's a huge question we get in classes all the time, is muzzle brakes. Which muzzle brake is the best? And they'll look at our rifles, and we've got, you know, a handful of different muzzle brakes on there, or different
flash hiders
or muzzle devices. Yeah, really. You know, we've got a handful of different things on there, and people are like, well, which one's better, and how do you like this one, and how's that one? It's like, look, they're all basically the same. There's only really a few out there that are drastically different.
Yeah.
The rest of them are doing it. They look cooler. They're neater. They allow me to attach a suppressor or a QD mount or something like that. But there's nothing really amazingly different. With the exception of a few that I prefer, there's really hardly any major differences behind it. So how do people, I mean, for the buyer, right, and we'll get more into kind of what Brethren Armament does, but if I'm going to come buy a Brethren Armament firearm, right, and you tell me, well, we're engineers, we're not just builders and manufacturers, like, that sounds really cool, right? But how do I not get tricked into the whole, oh, it's just a buzzword, like, oh, we're engineering our guns? Because when I hear engineer, that sounds cool, right? That sounds like we're, like, freaking blueprinting stuff, or we're, like, lots of math, and so we built your gun to super tight tolerances, it's all mil-spec, whatever, right? All those buzzwords, and people get suckered into that kind of stuff. So if I come to Brethren Armament and I want to buy a firearm, like, and you're going to tell me, well, this is why engineering our own firearms is so important. I mean, why does the firearms world need more engineers? How is that going to increase making something better and not just different?
Well, and that's a very loaded question, but I'll be happy to take
it. It is very loaded.
you know, when people come to us, customers that actually have, I actually do the majority, if not all of the incoming sales talks with every prospective customer, whether it's the custom built line or the factory guns. And, you know, there has been several, at least one or two times a week, there are 5-minute conversations that turn into hour, hour and a half conversations with customers because they want to get as in depth as possible. In terms of wanting to, as you said, not get swindled or find out what the best thing is that's out there, the first thing, like you said, is pay attention to those buzzwords. This is not a cut on anyone from the special operations community. I've worked with those guys before. There's nothing against that. Last time I checked the curriculum.
I know where this is going. I like it.
Last time I checked the curriculum at both for the Q course and in San Diego, there are no manufacturing classes that's in there. I believe there is a creative writing class now in Buds, which is good.
That's what I heard.
But it's one of those things we see all the time where something was designed by or with a special operations guy, whoever he may be.
Right.
And input is absolutely important because those are the guys that are probably going to be utilizing whatever article you're talking about to its absolute the maximum capabilities. But that doesn't translate into I can make that. And it's a completely different set of skills and a completely different knowledge base in order to be able to act from that. So, that would probably be the first thing I would look at is what do they actually tell you or what are the, what are they showing as their main advertising points? Is it because there's a guy who we know in the industry already who's been, a hired gun for advertising for a lot of other people to say, I'm putting my name on it so we can sell it for more.
And there's plenty of that goes on out
right
there.
The same rationale. If you see something that it's because the SEALs use it or blah, blah, blah. As far as I can tell, and I asked, one of my buddies from one of the teams on that, when those guys actually jump out of the airplane to go do their halo jumps, they must have like 9 watches on
because at least
there is, I've lost count of how many different companies out there, their main advertising point for their watches is, well, the SEALs
some dude halo jumping out of the back of a 130
or diving.
Yeah, don't forget that.
So, you go to SHOT Show, of course, I'm sure. Yep. Right. And you've seen SHOT Show Bingo.
Oh, yes.
So one of my favorite SHOT Show Bingo
slots. This is our favorite game.
Yeah, we love SHOT. Well, we love SHOT Show Bingo and Operator Points, right?
Operator Points.
So Operator Points and SHOT Show Bingo, we love playing these games. And so one of my favorite spots on SHOT Show Bingo is the one that was like, our product did you use by, and then it's got like SEAL / CAG / Ranger / like all the different. And that is the truth. I mean, it is the quickest slot to fill on SHOT Show Bingo. Yeah. Is that one right there? Because you walk, I mean, instantly the start of most people's sell pitch, you walk over, you know, we do a lot of trainings. We're also, you know, running ranges and stuff like that. So those are always our interest points. So we're there looking at a new target system and it's like, man, this target system looks really interesting. Why don't you tell me a little bit about it? Well, first of all, 75th Ranger Regiment. I'm like, all right, I'm done with this presentation already. Like, I don't care who uses it. Why don't you tell me if it's useful? You know, and what makes
explain
it different
to me
from
how
the
it
other
works.
Stuff. Yeah, it's great that it's new. It's neat that Rangers use it. That's super sweet. But why don't you tell me what this thing's actually going to do performance-wise? So that's something we see a lot in the business as well. So tell me then, Quinn, who uses Brethren Armament? I'm just kidding.
we've had some guys from various parts of the government that have used our stuff. We've got a couple. We don't have police departments or agencies that have really signed up for using them yet, but we do have several amount of law enforcement officers that are choosing to carry our stuff from there. But that's not the metric that you need to look at. That's
so
not the important
I expect
part.
On your next ad, I want to see some cops. I want to see full tat gear. I want to see them piling out of the back of like the new Jervs or the Mavs or whatever the local SWAT's using. I want to see them coming out. I want to see a Brethren Armament rifle in their hands.
And watches all over their wrists.
Yes, I think the next video we're planning on is with a couple other guys in the industry, and I think it's going to feature a Russian tank, a guy in a kilt throwing a telephone pole. That's going to be our main focus on the people really that focus on the using of our products Fantastic. Really know what they're doing.
Fantastic.
That's great.
It brings up another very good point as well, even on the optic side. And we use, of course, there's a whole bunch of different optics groups that are out there. But one of the things that get asked a lot from us is we're a Vortex distributor. And, sometimes people ask them, we'll sell them that stuff. And they ask, well, why do I want to put a $200 red dot on a $3,000 gun as opposed to a $500 red dot? And, looking at something like Aimpoint. Aimpoint makes fantastic stuff. And if money was not an issue and I was back working for Blank and I wasn't the one fronting the check, yeah, of course, I'm going to go with the absolute best. Mm. But me as a civilian now on the gun I carry in my backpack every day, I don't have a $500 optic on there because I'm, my days of swimming up from my SIL submersible vehicle are kind of over. I don't need to spend an extra $300 on something because it's fit, it's waterproof to 50 feet. Be honest with what you're looking at in terms of, what you're purchasing it for and what you're going to be using it for, because it doesn't matter if it has all the extra bells and whistles used by
night vision compatible.
I can't tell you how I had, I can't tell you. We had one guy, or this was back when I was just selling off an old optic. And then one guy got mad at me because it didn't have night vision capability. And I went, do you have night vision? He goes, no. I'm like, okay. Well, but it makes it better. I'm like, no, it's a very specific niche use that without that, it really is useless. In fact, it's just another button that you might accidentally hit. And all of a sudden you can't see your optic because you don't have nods on. A lot of it is just, as you said, when people come up and ask, what is this used for? Or tell me about your product. What is their lead in? Not who is it used by? Not, no celebrity endorsements, no pictures of the cool guys or pretty girls or all any of that other stuff. Tell me about your product. What is their first thing that they lead in? And there's plenty of guys that are in the industry that don't have engineering degrees that make very good quality products. There's two different ways to go about doing that. One, and I considered a bit of a fast track, but it results in 4 years of horrible school and a bunch of math, which I was not a math guy when I started, is the engineering side, being able to look at the theory behind whatever it is you're going to make before you make it. The other way to do it is you slowly, build it up from your initial idea to developing it on your own. Sometimes you ask for help. Sometimes you just keep on figuring it out, and you can still make a quality product that way. But those guys will also be the first ones to tell you, yeah, this muzzle brake that I'm working on, I've spent 5 years on, I've spent 10,000 rounds of ammunition on, here's my test data to show you what I got for performance or what we did. That's the key thing. Same thing when it comes into, someone says, we have really tight tolerances. Tight tolerances are not necessarily what you need. For our particular platform, there's a few items that really require very close, tight, aerospace grade tolerances. The rest of it's nice and big and open, specifically because that allows the system to be robust. Anytime you make something super, super tight, you run the risk of not making it right the first time. So of course you've got more parts that go in the trash. And then you run into environmental considerations, anything that happens, you're talking about different, when being able to, the difference between being able to hit a 500 yard shot and not hitting a shot is the spin of the curvature or the spin of the earth at that particular time. You're talking about very, very, very tight, groupings and stuff that's in there or a lot of environmental considerations. So when you have a very, very tight system, anything can affect it. So it really just comes into, if you're going to go buy whatever it is, look and see how it was originally designed. You don't need an engineering degree. There's tons of articles on that, everything from the AR to the 1911 and everything else. You can see how it was originally designed and what its original purpose was, and then look at what your purpose is and look what purpose they're trying to make it for and figure out if they're even close. The other thing is just, like you said, on the military side, two points that instantly make me negate anything that the military uses is CLP and the Bradley fighting vehicle. Those are two things that the military signed on. They spent millions of dollars on to use, and they're both horrible. They're horrible systems. CLP is impossible to both clean, lubricate, and protect all three things at once. That's one of those basic sciencey things that you can kind of go, no, that just,
you can't do 100%.
You really can't
split
do
over three things.
Yeah, you really can't do all those. And the Bradley fighting vehicle is
100% divided by three is not 100%.
No, as it turns out, it's not.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, easy.
I'm not a math guy.
Big math.
So, I mean, we've seen that in, even when police departments and stuff sign up for it, you have to remember that everyone else in the industry, with very few exceptions, and we still have to keep an eye on our bottom line because we still have to, you know, feed our families, keep the lights on at night. Whenever you see a police department or a military group that decides to sign on for what particular product, there's more than just the performance aspect. Mm-hmm. There's the bottom line. There's how much does it cost? Is there follow-on deals with all that other stuff? And this isn't to try to cast a murky conspiratorial shadow on the industry at large, but you know, everyone here is in the business of working for a living, and you know, what actually goes into making some of those decisions isn't always performance in the first and foremost. We've already seen that in police departments all over the place.
Well, so, anyone who's ever been in the military can attest to that. I mean, you know, our
equipment, only the best for us, made by the lowest bidder.
I was going to say, our equipment is typically not always the greatest thing in the whole wide world. A lot of times because, well, this cost X, you know, grade one costs X, grade two costs Y, Y is greater than X. X gets the job done.
Right.
We're going with X.
Word.
You know, so... Yeah. Now let's talk a little bit more about what you guys. We've talked a lot about how you guys, right, why you guys. Now let's talk about the what. Now I'm a big fan of the why and the how. You know, whether we're doing training, whether we're doing equipment, you know, I don't just look at the aim point, for example, or a vortex or a night force or whatever. When I'm looking at an optic, I don't say, "Oh, what optic do I want?" I say, "Why do I want this optic? What am I trying to accomplish with this optic?" Not what do the Navy SEALs use or whatever. What Why this optic? Why this reticle? Why this? So for us, the why is incredibly important. So now that we've heard the why of Brethren, now let's talk about the what of Brethren.
Now hopefully you've been convinced to buy whatever it is I'm going to sell you.
Yes.
Now we can tell you what we do. So our main stock and trade has been in the roller lock platform, or for those more used to the phrase, MP5s or MP5 clones. Mm. We've actually kind of gotten away from that, A, because... Germany has a lot of lawyers, mm-hmm, and they're probably over us right now, and they're Blackhawks waiting to jump in, because the MP5 was developed by H&K. That is their I don't think there are no patents or anything left on that, but that is a trademark thing that they keep in mind.
Well, and look what they did to what was it, German sporting, yep, guns, right? Yeah, GSG. I mean, when GSG first released their what the heck do they call that little 22
GSG
thing?
5. Yeah, the GSG 5.
Yeah, the GSG 5. That's right. Yep. And when they holy mackerel.
And they
sued the crap out of those guys.
And they went after them. There was no patents or design patents or anything left over. They went after them for a concept called trade dress, which is, you know, a very, frankly...
That's kind of a loose term.
It is a very loose and kind of sneaky term that that IP attorneys use, because, you know, saying that because it looks like you guys are trying to copy what ours originally looked like.
Because they look the same.
Right. That was the only thing that they had.
Which they did, in fact, end up changing. And the new GSG-5s actually look slightly different. But now I've seen Walther's released.
Well, Walther's licensed by HK, so that's a totally different thing.
Well, that
so
makes as sense. Long as right, you, they just released a 22 caliber MP5 looking deal.
But they also have the 416 and much other. As long as you pay the pound of flesh, then you can put their name on it, whatever
gotcha.
It is.
Gotcha.
The other thing, aside from the licensing part, which of course is important, but our primary focus on why we're trying to move away from the concept of a clone or even calling it an MP5 is because... the MP5 was originally developed in 1964, first started being used by the German police units in 1967. So we're talking about a 50-year-old design. You know, probably one of the only firearms that's still in use that still features rivets as one of the you know, primary systems for fabrication. That's an old, outdated system. We've been focusing on really trying to update that system and seeing what the platform's capable of, or what does it look like under modern standards. The MP5 was the apex predator of its day. It's the 1969 Camaro. That thing, you know, had no competitors in terms of the intended use that it had. But man, we're 50 years beyond that. What does the 19... You know, we haven't even gotten to this century. I usually tell people we've gotten the MP5 to up to maybe 1996. We still got a lot of work to do on there. But we've really been focusing on that firing platform, which is, for the technical people out there, is roller delayed blowback. There is actually no locking mechanism, which is a whole other conversation. But firearms that utilize that system... and trying to or improving those systems, developing new systems and platforms for it. We've actually released more parts and accessories for that platform in the last year than has probably been released in the last 20. And that's something we probably could have done with three products as opposed to the number that we did release, because there really hasn't been a whole lot of attention paid to it. So
I can say that with 9mm sub guns, the MP5 has always been my least favorite.
Really?
Yeah. And that's just because there's not a lot available for it.
Right.
The parts are expensive when they break. And again, when you're working for an agency or an organization,
right.
Rock and roll, do your thing, break stuff, send it back to the armor. He fixes stuff and then comes back to you, hopefully operational, right? But as an individual end user who's paying out of pocket for it, you know, the MP5 was never really a really exciting platform to me just because there wasn't a lot available
to it. It's been all but impossible for most people to get. There was a dark period of our history on American roller lock manufacturers where there was a guy that started right in the beginning once HK stopped importing the sporting variants of their particular platforms in here. And he got in early. He was actually from the automotive engineering world, and if he would have done things the right way, I probably wouldn't even have I wouldn't be building the guns that we are today because he had the opportunity to control that entire market. But there was some quality control issues that came up, the business practices that didn't mesh with the industry, and it kind of gave the entire industry our little niche of the industry kind of a bad name in terms of, oh, this is not from Germany, it's therefore crap. So that's something that we've had to overcome. But as you said, you know, even with that, they've been expensive. They're difficult to get. I mean, even right now, if I were to go buy a brand new German magazine from HK Parts, which is where we have all of our parts sold anyways, that's almost $70 for a magazine. Mm-hmm. That's atrocious by any standards. And this is for, again, a very old system.
A gun that's 50 years old, right. And I'm spending 75 right. bucks on right. a magazine.
So that's one of the main things that we've been doing is, first off, the entire manufacturing mechanism no longer relies on Germany for anything. The only thing that we're still using in our guns that is German is the trigger pack. Come the end of the year, that will actually be gone as well. So we actually control the entire manufacturing process for the old style stuff. Once we had that taken care of and we could reliably make quality parts to meet or exceed those original standards, now we can actually look at, all right, now let's improve it. The first thing that got a lot of haters when we first started out was every gun that we made, we welded a Picatinny rail on the top. Mm. And the HK purists got very, very mad at us because if HK had wanted that, they would have put one on there in the gun.
Sure.
And we have to explain to people that 1967, doesn't matter how smart the Germans were, they didn't have a time machine. And since the Picatinny rail wasn't developed at that point, they didn't have the ability to put it on there. You know, you have to look at the MP5 and its current modern form from Germany as it's a very, very old system. They're already planning on transitioning out of it. Anything that requires there's no point in changing or updating a system. You've gotten your money out of it. You've gotten your money out of it so far that you're able to sell off your old tooling that you weren't using to other countries so they can start doing it. So, you know, again, HK in its heyday, those guys were the wizards. They made some really cool stuff. They solved a whole lot of problems and were able to get some really niche solutions for guys that were out there that needed it. But that's kind of changed. They've got a different market point now. And, you know, that also means that we have to look at what our expectations are and what other options there are out there. The big thing that always gets brought up with that gun is the ergonomics. The base form, the ergonomics, they are horrible.
Can't even barely reach. With my tiny little thumb, dude, yeah, reaching that fire selector switch, I've totally compromised my grip just to be able to, you know, switch that thing from yep. one mode to another.
I'm convinced that when those guys were developing that in Germany, they had one test subject and
he was like Viking. 7 foot tall.
He was 7 foot tall and he had 8 inch long fingers. Yeah. There's only been two people that have actually found that have been able to hit the magazine release on the right side of that gun without having to alter the grip. Mm. And, you know, there's a whole host of other ergonomic issues, most of which we've attended to right now. So we've gotten the main ergonomic issues out there. Now, you know, from what we've learned in other platforms of, it doesn't matter how good the gun is. It's just like buying a really expensive pair of shoes. If they don't fit, it don't work. And I was one of those guys that I had a, you know, when I got in the civilian sector and I was able to pick my own hardware, I was carrying a pistol that was the best in the world. But it didn't fit me. I've got little girl hands, and trying to wrap my hands around a big, meaty, you know, USP 45, I had to alter the way I shoot in order to accommodate that gun. And I was always held back by that concept that when I finally gave up on it and I went to a platform that actually fit me, I instantly was performing better because now I had a gun that was bowing to my will as opposed to me doing it the other way around. So that's the, and that's something we've obviously seen a lot in the AR world, where now it's become our version of the Barbie, where you can, lightweight dust covers are now a thing, legitimately for some people.
Skeletonized grips.
Yes, yes. Let's go ahead and put every single hole in the gun as humanly possible.
Skeletonized guns, in fact.
Yes. Yeah, skeletonized guns in general are a thing. Lightweight.
There's no way that could possibly be a problem.
No. No way reducing the weight of a platform that slightly relies on weight for reliability could ever be an issue.
Or the fact that, you know, when Eugene Stoner originally developed that, and the millions upon millions of dollars that they spent in order to develop that platform, that a guy with a bandsaw in his garage has somehow improved on that. And that's the other thing that we come into when you see all these new, quote unquote, new improvements that have been made on a lot of the platforms out there. You do have to ask that question of, you know, look at your car, look at your Chevy Impala that's sitting out front, and go, Chevy spent millions upon millions of dollars in order to develop this thing to be able to meet these standards. Oil alone, let's talk about all of the different money and time they've spent on developing oil, and some guy is going to be able to figure that out in his office that somehow has made a better lubrication product than the entire automotive industry. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where, coming back to that original, you know, conversation about that stuff of, let's look and see why we're doing these performance changes. What are we actually getting out of it? And that's what we've been doing with the platform. Is ergonomics were our chief issue. We've hammered a lot of those out. Now we've made the gun a lot more customizable for the shooter instead of the other way around. And now that we've gotten that part taken out of, now we're moving from the back of the gun literally all the way to the front and seeing what we can do to improve and optimize all those component subsystems. The big thing that you were talking about was the trigger pack, or the trigger is a 15-pound trigger stock. The selector is horrible to use. The grips are awkward. You know, there's all sorts of problems with that. So come SHOT Show, we will actually have a brand new trigger system out that's a complete drop-in. It's retrofittable for the old ones, but you actually get a crisp AR-style trigger. Eventually, you'll be able to use any AR trigger that you want to. It's got AR-style fire controls that are a lot smoother and easier. You can now put any kind of different grips you want onto. And we've adjusted a lot of those ergonomic issues that we've had, but we've also done that with the mind of, it's part of a gun. It's an important part of a gun. And just changing that without really looking at the ramifications could be very, very bad.
Everything else.
So we've actually done it from scratch, taken our time on it in order to make, okay, if we're going to replace this and say it's better, it's got to actually be better. And we have to have those performance characteristics that state that. Does it actually cause any issues with reliability? The thing we've seen a lot in the Glock world, where now we take that Glock that Glock has, again, spent a fortune on developing to figure out how to make these functional, reliable, and at a decent price point, and we're going to go ahead and start cutting holes in it because we think it works better, but we're not looking at the whole picture.
Well, we see that in classes where people bring Glock. Of course, I would say Glock. I often refer to a Glock pistol, even though I don't carry one. I like them. I own one. They're great. It's not my daily carry piece, but it's certainly a great firearm. Obviously, it's been proven the world over time and time again, and I always refer to it as the AK of the pistol world because it's insanely reliable. It's not technically, you know, it's not built for ergonomics. It's not built for happiness. It's built for being an incredibly reliable, workable gun, and we'll see people come through classes start having problems. Their guns malfunction. It's like, what the hell did you do to make your Glock malfunction? And it's always, you know what's coming next.
Yep.
Well, I changed this part, or I read this, I saw this video on YouTube, and then, you know, the word Dremel starts getting thrown around or something like that, and you're like, oh, you broke your gun. So, again, the more we mess with things, sometimes the worse they get. But I remember when, you know, and it was just a few months ago, I think, that you guys were in Recoil, right?
It was issue 13, so I think that's almost, I think it was about a year ago now.
It was a year ago? My time frame sucks. But I saw, maybe I just read it recently, but I saw you guys on the cover right there, Brother in Arm MP5, and I'm like, oh God, who cares? You know what I mean? So I'm reading it, you know, I'm probably dropping a deuce reading your article, so yeah.
You're welcome for lower intestinal health.
And so I'm reading it, and I flip over to the MP5 thing, I'm just like, oh, who cares? But as I open it and I start reading about this piece of equipment and how you guys were talking about the MP5, suddenly I had an interest in MP5s again. Suddenly I was interested in what you were doing. And then, you know, recently at the first tactical event, you guys were out there, and I had an opportunity to actually see your firearm. Josh, one of our other instructors who's got a lot of operational time behind that gun, you know, we were both looking at him, kind of checking him over, and I was like, okay, this is interesting. This is new. This is This isn't just new. This is improved. This is better. This is not just shinier. This is not just a Picatinny rail. We didn't just coat it in FDE. We didn't just, you know, do something like that. We didn't just slap a bunch of Magpul crap on this thing. We are actually making this thing better. And so that was something that really piqued my interest. And then as you and I got into a conversation there, that really piqued my interest. So you make an MP5. Obviously, MP5s are known for 9mm. That's the big caliber for MP5. That's not the only thing that you guys make, and that's not the only caliber for MP5. Right. So tell us a little bit more about that.
In terms of the caliber capabilities, again, the system is its entire system unto itself. It's like the AR platform. Mm-hmm. So we get lumped in a lot with people saying MP5, but it literally has, I mean, we do it in almost every caliber from 9mm up to 308. The original design was actually from the G3, which was shortly after World War II. So that was actually around before the MP5 was, and that's what the MP5 kind of shares its heraldry with. But we do, obviously, we do 223, we do 40, 10mm, 40 Smith. I want to do 40mm so bad, trust me.
Yes!
Someday.
Sure. Magazine fed.
You know,
I'm in, dude. I want that.
I don't want to have to carry it, but I'd love to own it and make someone else carry it.
Exactly. A magazine-fed 40 mic that works? That's better than the MGL.
Yeah.
No rotary system. Don't have to reload it. Just drop mag, reload. Ooh. Devastating. All right, anyways.
Yeah, but
out of dream.
Whoa.
The other thing that got brought up, the BA300, of course, is the 300 blackout variant that we do. And that actually has another really interesting idea behind is the 300 Blackout shares a lot of its original design with the 8mm Kurtz, which was originally developed for the SDG-44, which was the grandfather for the MP5 and the roller delayed blowback system in the first place. So it took, you know...
Because that's like late World War II era that the SDG-44 came out. Because it was one of those guns that potentially could have swayed the war in the Germans' favor if we hadn't bombed all their factories
very
efficiently.
So the system itself was originally the delayed roller lock. I'll use that term loosely. I know that's not the correct one, but the delayed blowback system was originally found during testing for the Garado 6H, which eventually led to more development on the SDG-44. But that's how far back we've gone in terms of, you know, what kind of improvements can be made on this. Is we're still toying around with World War II ideas at this point. You know, we're using the original German designed round for a gun that was originally designed in Germany. It just took 50 years and a couple jumps across continents in order to get here. So in terms of what the capabilities are of the system, I will definitely say they are different. There are some pros and cons to the system, like there is with anything else, that some of which may be more alluring to some customers or more beneficial for some people, because it's got some pros that the other systems out there don't have, and vice versa. And there's a lot of proven reliability, a lot of proven performance with the system. It's just, what can we do to better improve that, and what can we do to bring it up to modern standards in terms of what we expect from a firearm? So literally anything under the sun that runs that system is something that we've worked on or something that we're developing for. All the parts and accessories, fixing old ones, pretty much anything that involves the roller delayed blowback system is within our wheelhouse, and even some things without.
Now, I saw your guys' platform at the first tactical event was Shot 5.56.
Okay. So yeah, that was the...
That's super sexy. I like it. It's compact, small, great to use.
Yep. Doesn't have a buffer tube.
No buffer tube, so I can fold that stock. I can keep that thing nice and tight and compact. But here's my question. If you were going to try to sell me that system versus an AR-15, because, of course, the AR-15 is just everybody's gun, right? It's America's new rifle, and we've all used them plenty of times. We all own them. That goes without saying. They're great guns. They operate. As long as we don't monkey with them too much, they'll work just fine. If you were going to say, I want to sell your brother an armament 5.56, basically MP5-ish type looking rifle,
okay,
right, or carbine or pistol or whatever we want to call it, right, what are you going to say? Why that gun?
First, you have the capability of firing it with the buttstock closed, so that's a key aspect. You can buy it as a pistol. Obviously, you don't have that additional length. You don't have to account for that. The other thing when it comes
to... And I can fire it as a pistol with the stock collapsed without registering it as an SBR.
Yeah, we actually do even, we have our own brand of SIG brace that we made with SB Tactical that mimics the look of the A2 style fixed stocks that again goes right on there. And depending on what part of your anatomy you're interacting with, you can shoot it that way. I won't tell you to shoot it from your shoulder, but I'm not a doctor, so I can't tell you where your shoulder starts and ends. That's another conversation. So yeah, it does function reliably without that. The other aspect in terms of what you said was reliability of We don't have any sort of gas pouring system. You have a true free-floating barrel. You can make an accurized version where it doesn't even have the front sight post and actually have a true, complete free-floating barrel. So there's some implications on there depending on where you're using it and the environment that you're using it in, that that tiny gas pouring system and the fouling and everything else that you run into with an AR system, you don't have with these. The other thing is when you start getting into super short barrel lengths, 8-inch barrels, obviously there's not a whole lot of ARs that run those very well. That 8-inch 5.56 runs all day long. We actually make a 5-inch version. In theory, there's
make a 5-inch 5.56.
Yeah, we actually make a 5-inch 308. Now, granted, I will admit that that thing is ridiculous except for scaring Asian tourists. But the aspect is that because of the way the system's designed, it's got different problems and different solutions. Barrel length, we don't have the same issues that you run into with any system that runs a piston or direct impingement. Because
I've never seen a 5.56, even this... Under 10.5, it's very uncommon to see a 5.56 run efficiently. Obviously, you see a lot of 7.5 inches. We've run plenty of them through training. We run plenty of them on our own. And it's pretty uncommon to have them just run without a hiccup. So the ability that you guys have to run something super tiny, and people start talking about, hey, I want a really, really small gun. Like you said, I want to put it in my backpack. I want to keep something handy. We got a San Bernardino thing. We got a Baltimore incident. Whatever. We want to be able to keep a gun tight, compact in our vehicle that we can just snap into action. This sounds like a solution.
It is. It may not be your solution, but it is a solution.
Sure.
There, you know, of course, and as we talk about, there are some other performance things that we want to improve on there. It's going to be heavier than your AR for the most part. Some of that has to do with the operating system that we're cleaning up. Some of it has to do with the other parts and stuff that's on there that we've already fixed. You know, our M-Lock and Key-Mod handguards are actually 2 ounces lighter than the plastic ones. And now you have the ability to run all the different lights, lasers, and accoutrement that you would want to run with an AR that originally you couldn't run unless you bought a $400 Surefire light that only worked for this one thing. So, without turning into one big advertisement, there's a whole lot of possibilities that's in there. We've done a whole lot of customization and improvement options and other parts available to make that gun fit more for you. But it is one of those things, unlike an AR, that not everything's immediate drop-in. Some stuff does require, you know, a seasoned eye and a knowledgeable hand in order to do correctly, which is why we have it set up the way we do, where some of those trickier modifications and stuff that we do for people, but some of it, you know, as we eventually progress, it will hopefully be able to get to a point where it's obviously cost-effective for the average Joe to be able to get it, and it's something that they can modify or suit to their needs instead of having to figure out what they want right off the bat and throw their money on it now and be, I don't want to say stuck, but, you know, have a little bit more difficulties if they want to change things up or change the role that they plan on having it running.
Now, how can people find out more information about you? What's your website?
Our website is brotherinarms.com, brotherinarmament.com. It all goes to the same place.
You're on Facebook?
Yeah, we are on Facebook. We're on Instagram. HK Pro is a fairly common forum for most of the HK folks. We're on there as well. The other thing, as we talked about before, was if you want to know more about us and what we do, there's an entire knowledge base section on our website where we go into sometimes disgustingly specific detail on various aspects that actually impact what your gun is, how it works, you know, how it works for you and things like that. So the main thing, you know, aside from we offer guns and all sorts of guns and all that other stuff, is we're trying to put more knowledge into the hand of the consumer, not just for buying our stuff, but for buying everything and learning to have that, I don't want to say pessimistic, but somewhat critical eye whenever you see anything that's new and figuring out, okay, is it actually better? Is it worth me spending my money on? Because we build, some of our guns are expensive. I'm not going to lie. Some of them are $3,000 a piece. For the record, I don't own a $3,000 gun. I do not. My safe has 4 guns in it. They're all for work. And I don't have anything that I would consider collector's piece. Everything has a purpose. So, you know, when we ask people to spend that kind of money on something like that, we want you to know that there is a purpose behind that. And we try to make that as clear and transparent as possible. And that's something we hope to carry on in the rest of the firearms industry, where we all start buying $3,000 guns that are $3,000 guns and not $400 guns that bought through a distributor or probably $200 guns, but with, you know, a couple hours with a Dremel and a sander, now it's a $3,000 gun.
Right.
That's, you know, probably our main focus on firearms in general, or what we offer to people that aren't wanting to buy our guns. There's still information to be had, and there's still lessons to be learned, and we want to be able to pass those on to everyone that is interested in listening.
So easily identifiable for anyone who's looking them up online, on Instagram, on Facebook, is the canine paw print with the red circle around it. So make sure you look for their logo.
It's actually a cat.
That is not a cat.
It is a cat paw. It is.
Why does it have claws on it?
It is an Irish cat paw.
An Irish cat has claws out?
Yes. That actually
looks just like a canine.
Where the original logo came from, and where our old logo we've changed. The other one was our crest from our family. That after my wife mentioned that it happened to look like a certain limp part of the male anatomy, I couldn't unchange that. But the original. The original design for everything for our company was my brother and I are both Irish, and our clan motto is actually "Touch not a cat but a glove," which makes no sense to anyone that doesn't speak Gaelic anyways, even in the English translation. But Irish mountain cats, they actually do have a rather large claw like
and
that.
And so they've got the claws out. Okay, yeah, see me looking at that. That's a dog print. So yeah. Irish cat.
It is an Irish cat.
And I'm headed to the Google to learn more factual information about Irish cats. All right, so thanks for coming in today, Quinn.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
This weekend, Veterans Action Shooting Match.
Friday night,
Veterans Action Shooting Match. We've got several spots still left open, so if you are within the sound of my voice and you would like to come to the Veterans Action Shooting Match at Cowtown Range, it is free to all veterans. Free ammo, free guns, free prizes, free food, all that good stuff. And we're going to be shooting some full-auto AK. We're going to be shooting up some Christmas trees and ornaments and Christmas lights. It's going to be a blast.
Don't forget your ugly Christmas sweater.
Don't forget your ugly Christmas sweater. Email us info@trainingaz for more information. Next week. We are not live.
We are not.
We are actually going to pre-record that show, so our apologies. You're not going to be able to listen to us live next week. We have a major training conflict. We're not going to be able to be live on the show, but we are going to be live, of course, the following week. So check out our pre-recorded show, but we are not going to release it till Monday. We're not giving you any early time, all right?
Uh-huh.
So you're going to still have to wait till Monday to make that happen. But we're going to be talking about demystifying firearms maintenance and the difference between great advertising and what actually works. Ooh. So that's what we're going to be talking about for next week's show, so make sure you check that out. Again, not live, but it'll be posted up as normal. You'll be able to, you know, get it around about 10 o'clock or so next Monday morning, 10 o'clock Mountain Standard Time. So, all right. Any parting words, John?
No.
All right. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.